deal about the life of the people. In other words, when they dig up a toy, let's say, out of the Incan ruins, something that kids were playing with in the days of the Incans, they can tell a lot about how the Incans thought about life and things. Like, for example, if they dig 2,000 years from now, if they dig a toy, a typical toy of the 20th century out of the ruins of what we're going to leave behind, right? And it turns out to be a T-34 tank. That's a toy, you know? Well, they'll know that war was one of the principal occupations of man in the 20th century, and who can deny it? Do you agree? Okay. So toys are somewhat significant in a curious hyperbolic way. And so the other day, see, I'm walking around town, and I cool into this place there, you know, where I'm going to have a bagel. I go into this place where they have I have bagel and organic cranberry jam, and I pull into this place, see, and by the way, these are non-organic bagels, which is kind of a contradiction, but an organic bagel has a certain, it's like reading about sex as opposed to being in the arena. And nevertheless, George, so that's a colorful picture, right? I mean, I like the idea of the arena, right? Bugles blowing, you know, Nero and the whole thing. But nevertheless, I'm walking around there, seeing. I'm sitting next to this guy, and he looks up and he says, "Old friend of mine," seeing. I said, "What's the matter?" And he said, "Oh, you know, my kid. He's having his birthday," and he said, "I don't have no time to go get a present for him. He said, I'm really, really strapped this afternoon. Really," he said, "to be honest with you, I forgot it was his birthday." He says, "And here it is. All of a sudden." He says, "His birthday, and I've got to get this kid a present." He says, "I'm going to go home. You know, he's 7 years old." He said, "Then he's going to come up, and there's going to be a lot of yelling, and what did Daddy bring?" And turns out all Daddy brought back was a lot of old expense account chits that he's been signing all day long. That's about all, you know. And being a chump of the first order, I said, "Well, look, Stanley, I'll pick up something for you. I've got a couple of hours. I'll pick up something for you. What do you want? What would you like to give the kid?" He said, "Oh, you know. You know, he's a kid." I said, "Well, what kind of a kid is he?" "You know, he's a kid. He sits around, looks at the television, you know, and I have to hit him once in a while, and, you know, he's a kid, you know." I said, "Well, would you like to get a hand-carved oatmeal bowl from American Artifacts, which is an elegant kid antique shop down in the village, hand-carved antique oatmeal bowl, you know, shows Grandma Moses on the outside mixing up the oatmeal." He says, no, this is not an oatmeal kid. He's a Fruit Loop kid. I said, "A Fruit Loop kid?" "Yeah." He said, "Well, you know, he won't eat any stuff like oatmeal. I mean, he doesn't eat cream of wheat. He eats Fruit Loops and the Count Chocula's." And I said, "Count Chocula's?" He said, "Yeah, Count Chocula's." He says, "Terrible little things, little round things that somehow they're connected with Dracula." I said, "Oh, I see. Oh, yes, of course, that makes sense. And he said, "Just get him anything. Don't worry about it." So I said, "Okay." So I figured, well, it's going to be kind of fun, you know. So I walked down the street, and I made a basic discovery that afternoon. And that discovery is that there are three types of toy shops now existing today. It used to be just toy shops. Now there are three. There's the toy shop for the conservative rich kid. This is F.A.O. Schwartz. The conservative rich kid, whose idea of a fantastic gift is an 18th century music box that plays "Mary Had a Little Lamb," or you know, you've seen that kind of stuff, or a gigantic life-size imported from Germany stuffed animal, life-size giraffe. Now this is a conservative rich kid, traditional but plush, right? Then there is the middle of the road kid. You go into the middle of the road kid type shop. What do you see there? You know, you see jigsaw puzzles. You see little plastic tanks. You know, you see little toy telephones. That's the middle of the road kid. And then you see the new development, which I'm reporting to you now, is the new avant-garde hip kid shop, where all toys are related to the kid's life experience. I'm walking down the street, and I see this toy shop. It's called Ding Dong 3. So I look, Ding Dong 3. And I walk up to the door, you know, and I swing the door open, and I step in, and instantly, I'm surrounded by this gigantic roar of rock. It's fantastic, you know. lights are flashing on and off. It's a total environment. They got all these plastic shells all over the place. They got balloons that are blowing up and down, green and light, you know, flashes all over the place. And up comes this elegant, fantastically hip-looking clerk, you know. He's got a beard, the whole works, you know. He's got this body shirt on. He's tie-dye jockey shorts, the whole bit, see. And he says, may I help you, sir? Incidentally, sir is the ultimate put-down in the village. When you're called sir, you might as well just turn around and go out. So he says, may I help you, sir? Huh? I said, yeah, I'm looking for a gift for a kid. How old is the child? I said, 7. Oh, well, we have some very fine things in that age group. So just walk over this way with me, sir. The rock is roaring. Of course, we are now really in Ding Dong 3. I can see it. It's all around me. And I'm trying to give him helpful suggestions. I says, well, how about a toy telephone? You know, kids like to pretend like they're telephoning. It's a toy telephone. My God. He says, well, we do have something, though. He says, we have a toy Bug-A-Pal kit. I said, a what? He says, Bug-A-Pal kit. I said, what's a Bug-A-Pal kit? He says, well, here they are right here. I think you may find them interesting. The child is interested in telephones. He'll be interested in bugging the telephone conversations of his little pals. And it's all in fun, and gives him a lot to talk about that afternoon in the recess time over at the school.
I said, you mean you can buy a toy bugging kit?
It's called, yeah, just the next one. Don't stop, Jim. Don't stop. Because this stuff just went on steadily, you know, the music is roaring. So I said, a toy bugging kit? And he said, yeah, a toy bugging kit. He said, but we have many other things. Is your child interested in animals? I said, well, I don't know, you know, it's animals. I figured a stuffed teddy bear, you know, kind of stuff. He said, well, come over here. We have some wonderful animals for the modern progressive kid. He said, how about the electro shark? I said, electro shark? Oh, it's very interesting. He said, it's battery operated, and you can put it in the swimming pool, and this little electro shark swims around in exactly the same swimming movements as a real shark. And it'll bite, too, if it's properly set. I thought about this for a minute. An electric shark. It's for the, you know, the hip with it kid today, because there is a very definite strain of sadism that runs through many a kid's world today. After all, he's watching television. He's seeing this stuff happen, and you can buy now a car crash kit. Oh, you know that the most important side of any television show today, any series show, is the moment when the cars crash and Lee Marvin falls out. You know those things? Well, you get a little new Lee Marvin falls out of one car, and Steve McQueen falls out of the other one. And the third one blows up, sending Carl Malden into a little plastic ocean. It's really interesting. You know, I don't make the news, but I think the most fantastic thing that I saw, I almost bought it. I said, well, how about a game? Oh, games. We have plenty of games. He said, how about the little Watergate panel game? I said, Watergate panel? Yes, the children love to watch Watergate on television. And you can now buy a game where they roll dice to see who's going to be Sam Irwin. I said, Sam Irwin? Well, who's it? He says, well, of course, obviously, the child who rolls the lowest number on the dice is it. I said, what does he do? He says, well, he's the witness. And he can plead, of course, executive privilege as he wishes. It's all part of the game. This is executive privilege, Watergate, Bug-A-Pal kit. I mean, don't you guys sell anything like a cowboy suit or an Indian suit or anything?
Oh, my God, Indian suits, cowboy suits. That's gone out years ago. We do have, you know, the children like to relate to things that they see and enjoy. We have a little Howard Cosell suit here. It looks just like Howard. He gets a little Howard Cosell face mask as well as a set of interchangeable three-colored Howard Cosell toupees. And 5 signs that he can put up. We love Howard and Dandy Don. And the rock rolls, you know.
10 fingers on an old rock.
So I go out, you know. I walk out into the street. I says, gee, you know, kind of great. And, you know, so the hip kid is getting an entirely different ball game than, you know, the ordinary walking kids. I kind of like the idea, though, that you can buy games now related to almost any national. Right now, do you know that on its way to toy stores all over the country, already are the first games relating to the number one American hang-up right now today? What is it? Gas, of course. Of course. Do you know that you can get a game now where the kid, you know, who rolls the highest number on the dice is the Shah of Iran? And they have little freighters? and you can buy one called Filler Up. You can buy another one. Yeah, Filler Up. That means you've won the game. Once you get to the point, it goes around the track. See, it says buy $2 worth, advance 2 squares. Stop at the Esso station and wait 2.5 hours. You know, and you just keep moving around. And finally, if you get to the end, it says full tank, full steam ahead, and the kid wins. First kid that gets a full tank wins the game. There are other, you know how you cannot win the game? So you roll the dice. It's a good game. You roll the dice, and if you roll, say, a 5 and a 1, it's a 6, right? So you go six little squares. You go thunk, 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 thunk. And you land on the 6th square, and the 6th square says, you have lost your place in line. Go back 12 squares. Oh! Well, how many times has this happened to people? You go back 12 squares, you know? Then you roll the dice again. You roll a 2 and a 3, right? You roll a tray. So he rolls 3. He goes, thunk, 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 3. It says, you forgot to bring your key to your gas cap. Go home and get it. Lose 2 turns. So, you know... This is WOR New York. Would you please hit the money button for me, Jim? You have a good one in there, are they? Yes. They're all live? Oh, well, no. You keep that there for a minute. Now I'll lay this goodie on them there. If you like to pretend you're Fu Manchu, I would like to suggest that you drop down to the House of Chan. It's very elegant Chinese food, and it's at 52nd and 7th Avenues. And it's right in the heart of everything, in the heart of the excitement district there. And you're looking at me kind of quizzically, Jim. Do you eat with chopsticks yourself? No? Well, boy, that's where you separate the sheep from the goats. It certainly is. And I'm good with chopsticks. No, I really like to eat chopsticks. Do you know that, I like to eat with them. And if you want to eat with chopsticks down to Asuchan, they're delighted. Of course, that means you're going to have a four-hour lunch if you're the average chopstick operator. But their food is great. Seriously, I've been eating down at the House of Chan for a long time. You know, it's hard to talk about a true tradition in New York, and it is. It's been there for, well, let's see, according to this fact sheet here, it's been there over 35 years. That's a long time in New York, friend. 52nd Street and 7th Avenue. It's the House of Chan. It's right around the corner from everything. And the food is great. They're open Sundays. And if you're in a hurry to go to a theater or something, you just tell them, and they'll have that stuff on the table real quick. They have 22 cooks, chefs, working all the time. And everything is fresh and clean and great. House of Chan, they have a good bar there, too. And let's see, what do we have with the Westchester Fair? What's that? Westchester Fair. The Westchester Corporation Antiques Fair. What is the Westchester Corporation? Anyway, the Westchester Corporation's Antiques Fair and Flower Show will be at the New York Coliseum March 7th through the 13th. Open daily from noon to 9 p.m. The tickets will be $250. But 10 listeners... Now wait a minute, let's follow this carefully. But 10 listeners may get a pair of tickets free. Send your name and address to Antiques Fair in care of WOR... New York, 10018. And by the way, I'm not going to tell you how to spell antiques. This is the way they're going to tell whether you deserve one or not. Antiques Fair, care of WOR, New York, 10018. Just send your name. From all entries on hand at noon, Monday, March 4th, 10 will be drawn at random, and free tickets will be sent those entrants by mail. So send your name and address to Antiques Fair, WOR, New York, 10018. And again, the time that this thing is going to be is open daily from noon to 9 p.m., March 7th through the 13th. Now you can hit me with that. Yes, powerful drama and gripping suspense await you tomorrow night at 8 on Channel 9. Share in the dramatic aftermath of an almost perfect crime when Million Dollar Movie presents Lana Turner, Anthony Quinn, John Saxon in Portrait in Black, the inside story of a romantic triangle that leads to murder. Oh, it's tomorrow night at 8 on WOR-TV, Channel 9. I wonder if Channel 9 ever plugs my show. Don't hold your breath. Don't hold your breath. This is a one-way world, friends. And while we're on the subject of giving a little plug here, we have a note here. Leisure Expositions announces that the 1974 International Sports Show is coming to the New York Coliseum. Beginning Saturday, March 9th, and running through March 17th, the New York Coliseum will be filled with all the stuff. If you're into camping, if you're into that scene, camping, backpacking, and all that stuff, they've really got the show there. The show will feature a fantastic variety of all kinds of camping, sporting equipment, recreational vehicles. I wonder if they're going to turn out campers now that are operated with foot pedals. You know? I think that's not a bad idea, is it? You get the whole family working on it, you know, like the galleys. You know, the Viking ships, you know, you get them all going like mad. And you can pick up a few slaves around the neighborhood if you're smart enough about it. But nevertheless, this is all going to be on hand there at the Coliseum. On hand will also be representatives from campsites all over the country available to answer your questions. This is an ideal event for the entire family. Special discount tickets are available to WOR listeners by mailing in a card to Sports Show, to care of WOR, New York, 10018. You'll be sent as many discount tickets as you request. They don't say how much it is, but, you know, I don't know what they mean by that. That's okay. But, you know, that's funny. it's camping. If you're into camping, and I've been a camper ever since I was in Boy Scouts. I love camping, really do. There's camping and camping, of course. And I remember one three-year period in my life when the camping was less than interesting. Have you, if you're into camping and you ever see army or more military type movies, you know, war movies that are always on television, do you ever see guys sleeping in a tent? You rarely do. In fact, you rarely ever see movies about you know, the military where they're actually doing what people really do in the military. In fact, I don't recall any actually that was about the kind of stuff that you really do. And I just wonder how much of our life is based on the total unreality that the movies have foisted off on us as being reality. did you see a note the other day in the Times sports section? It was this baseball player out on the coast. He decided he was going to get a job off-season. You know, he wanted an off-season type job. So and it was something he wanted to do. So he decided he was going to be a policeman. So he went down there, you know, took all the exams and stuff, and he was appointed a cop. And he's out on the coast. And the first thing he said, he says, "Hey, this ain't like Adam 12. He says, "Nothing like the rookies." In other words, people relate their lives to what they see on television or in the movies. And it either falls short of what they see on television, or it's better than what they see on television. The movies are now the norm of reality. It used to be the other way. Of course, people would judge television by whether it fell short or was better than life. But today, it's the opposite. You judge your life that way. And a lot of people think that they must be living. For example, you ever seen The Name of the Game? You ever see that one? It's a television drama about this guy that runs this big magazine. And apparently they never have any circulation problems. They never talk about that stuff. You know, they never have paper shortages or strikes down at the linotype department or anything. But he just runs a big magazine. And he's got this girl assistant. She's always making smart remarks. And I wonder how many girls are bugged watching this because their life in the office has nothing to do with the life that this
girl apparently lives. She can tell her boss, you know, well, come on now, boss. You mean to tell me you're sending me to Japan this time for 2 weeks, a research trip? And he says, yeah, you're going to have to go. Oh, what a drag. I thought it was Greece this week. You know, that kind of stuff. And so I wonder how many of us feel, us in the editorial sense, feel a little sense of kind of cut off somewhere at the pass when we watch the fantastic things that happen on television, like car crashes. Oh, wow. They have such unbelievable car crashes. They never have fender benders. You know, never have the kind where, you know, two guys get their bumpers hooked and get out and start yelling at each other. You know, which is the kind you always see. But I think commercials are part of that, too. You know, the whole world is such a perfect world. And you notice nobody ever argues with anybody in a commercial. They have a whole new kind of commercials now where a lady is holding up, a little underneath it says, a candid camera portrait of this little thing. She says,
did you know that Right Guard is 7% less effective than our new fantastic containing V7, a special ingredient? Our new, here's this fantastic new deodorant.
See, they fluff a lot, see, to make it sound like it's real.
Do you know that this is 7% more effective than the one you're using, which is Right Guard?
And the girl says, no.
Really? I don't. Why, gee, that's a surprise to me. Yes, it is. 7% more effective. What if I told you that? Would you try it? Well, of course I'd try it. Yes, I'll buy some right now.
You notice nobody ever says, what do you mean? How come? Ooh, you're just saying it. You work for them guys. no way, see. But everybody just accepts. And there's another kind of commercial where people are constantly, there's a whole new trend in commercials. It's a very interesting one where people are constantly telling other people that they have loused up. There's one where a lady tells the other one, she says, oh, come on, dummy, you brought the wrong cough syrup. And you see that one? And the woman says, well, what do you mean? You know, she looks a little confused. And she says, yes, of course, dummy. What you want to buy is... And she tells her... And of course, she accepts that totally. There's another scene where a guy is buying a razor. You see that one? And he's in there buying a razor, and he's talking to the druggist. And suddenly, some guy right out of the blue says to him, hey, listen, you want to get the double-track, multi-dipole, semi-operating elliptical razor. It's fantastic. I bought one, and it's fantastic. Get that. The guy says, oh, really? Really? Yes, it's fantastic. And he runs out with this $12 razor. He never questions. So I suppose we're living in ages which are laced through with both cynicism on one hand and total romantic believability on the other hand. And you find this true in the world of movies. I'll tell you a little story about camping. You thought I'd lost that thread, didn't you? Oh, no, it's all connected. The reality of camping has very little to do with the concept that you read in the great camping magazines. Everything looks so kind of great, you know. And I must say this, that most people I know who go camping generally go to places that are really commercial camp sites. You agree with that, Jerry? You're a camper. Most people head for what they call camp sites, where, you know, you pay $2 or $3 a night. Believe it or not, some campsites today are so elegant. And so, yes, Jim, so elegant and so plush that it costs just about as much to stay in the campsite as it does the Ramada Inn down the road. Oh, yeah, fantastic swimming pools and the whole bit, you know. Yeah, I saw one campsite that had not only swimming pools, it had a sauna bath attached to it. And this is a campsite. You know, people think, yeah, we really got out in the woods there. We're really roughing it. And they have a little store there, a supermarket that's open, sells them all kinds of stuff. And they have gas-operated barbecue pits. You know, you don't have to mess around with carrying in any charcoal or wood. You just turn on a gas, you know, and light it. It's all faked up and looks good. So this is called camping. Well, I remember one time camping. I love to camp, but there was one period in my life where a tent began to pall very, very, very strongly. You know, I think choice is important to people. I really do. I seriously do. I think if you do something by choice, your attitude is almost totally different from having to do a thing by necessity. Now, you know that there's a whole big thing today that people are going through about baking their own bread. And it's kind of a, you know, great thing to do. It's a kind of a new in thing. Have you run across this? Yeah, it's a whole new hobby. Well, that's okay as long as you know secretly. You can always run down and get a loaf of Pepperidge Farm rye bread. You know, it's right down the street. See, you're doing it because you want to do it. Well, if you had to bake bread every day, I remember one time I was in the mess hall in the Army. I was on KP. And this guy was sitting at the mess hall table. It was between meals. And between meals, the mess hall gets a certain quietness, and the KPs work around cleaning up the mess hall, and they do stuff like, wash the windows in the mess hall, things like that, see. And it was quiet. It was kind of nice. And the great mob had left. We had finished the dishes and all that stuff. And I was down on the floor scraping some gum off the floor or something. So it was nice and quiet there. And sitting at the table there, the mess hall table, this guy's got on a GI cup. And he's wearing a white apron. He's wearing fatigues, and he's got this white apron on. And he's got a GI cup full of this coffee. See, when you're on KP, you drink coffee all the time. So he's got this coffee, see, and he's just sitting there staring out in the window. And kind of depressed, you could just see. He's just radiating boredom and depression. But he was not a KP, I point out. He was one of the cadre, which means that he was like one of the cooks. He was like one of the guys that's always in the kitchen. So he's sitting there, and I'm down on the ground there, knocking away at the gum. And he looks down at me. He says, "Don't bother with that." I swear, you know, this mess sergeant wants me to clean it up. And he said, "Well, so you want a cup of coffee?" Well, of course, he was a cadre. Also, he was a buck sergeant. So I said, yeah. So he says, "He's going to back in the kitchen, pull yourself one, come on back out." And so I go back in the kitchen. I pull myself a cup of coffee out of this gigantic urn and came back out with my cup. And I sat down with him. See, so we're sitting there in the mess hall, and it's quiet. I can hear the KPs out in the back there. They're wrestling around with the garbage cans, and a couple of guys come in and out with brooms. And it's very quiet. It's kind of pleasant, you know. And off in the distance, you always hear the sound of about 2,700 guys drilling. It's in the distance. Hop, hop, hop. You just hear this. Then you hear the sound of truck motors all the time when you're around the Army, because they have these great big heavy bore trucks. And they're always going in low gear. And we're sitting there quietly drinking the coffee. And he says, "What do you do?" I said, "I'm in radar." He says, "Radar?" I said, "Yeah." See, he didn't know what we did. This was a consolidated mess where they used to feed guys from companies all over the area there. And I never had seen this guy before. So I just happened to pull KP in this mess hall, and he didn't know what I did. So I said, "I'm in radar." I said, "Radar? I didn't think you guys could ever pull KP." I said, "Well, we got a chicken officer. He thinks it's good discipline if we all pull KP, you know, just like the regular troops." So, boy, so guys like that really, really get me down deep where the, you know, I cannot tell you what he actually said. But there was a place where it really gave him a fantastic pain, see. I says, "Yeah, you know," I said, "that's the way it is." He says, "Radar, gee, that really must be great." And he looks at me, sort of romantic, like he's thinking of radar. And I says, "Well, it is interesting." I said, "But boy, I'll tell you, it's 2.5 years now. This is very complicated stuff. It's 2.5 years, and we're still working on our tech manuals. It's it's bad news. You just gotta love this stuff or forget it." He says, yeah. So I guess I couldn't cut that. I said, "What do you do?" He says, "I bake bread." I says, "You bake bread?" He says, "That's all I do. Bake bread." He says, "I've been baking bread now every day for 2.5 years. Every day I bake bread. I said, don't you bake anything else? Like pastry or pies? Nope. I bake bread. He said, we got a pastry cook. He comes in twice a week and he cooks and bakes pies. So they never put me on pies. I said, you bake bread every day? You never run into a guy that bakes bread. He says, yep, bake bread. I said, you make all the GI bread, all that bread that's over there? He says, yep, I baked every loaf of bread that has been served in this consolidated mess hall for over 2 years now, every loaf. And that includes all the stale bread. I baked it all. I said, gee, that must be exciting, baking bread and seeing bread. It's exciting. He said, you have baked one loaf of bread, and you have baked all loaves of bread. Every loaf of bread is like every other loaf of bread. He said, once in a while, there's a little excitement. Maybe a fly gets in the dough, something like that. But I bake bread. He says, by the way, would you like a sandwich? I said, gee, I don't know. He says, well, look, I just baked some fresh bread. He said, you want to taste some of my fresh bread? So we go back in the kitchen, and he takes this loaf. It's real hot. See, and we never got it like that. When we got the loaf of bread, it was always up in a screen, little box up inside the mess hall. They kept it in a screened box, and it was always in big shelves of bread, all piled up one after the other. See, and he takes this very hot loaf of bread. He just pulls it out of the thing there where it was cooling, and he says, here, I'll show you how to do it. And he takes this great big knife, and he goes, whap! Boy, he knew how to cut bread. He goes, whap, like that. You have to cut a hot bread different than you cut cold bread. Cold, if you try to saw it like you do cold bread, forget it. He just goes, boom, like that. Boom, boom, boom. He cuts out 4 slices of this fantastic bread. And he says, what do you like? He said, we got cheese, we got bologna here, cold cuts, we got peanut butter. What kind of sandwich you want? He said, hey, I'll tell you what let's do. He said, hey, Howie, how about frying me up some bacon? With that, Howie puts on some bacon. See, this is another cook working in the back. He just throws the bacon on, and he fries up. So we sat there, and we had bacon sandwiches, the two of us sitting there. And he's looking at the bread very, very critically. So he's looking at the bread, and he takes a little piece out, and he says, now, you see, you take this bread, and you hold it like that, and you make your fingers like that. If it makes a ball of this kind, he says, just like this. He says, feel it. Feel how that ball is. Here, feel that ball. So I take the ball. He says, now you feel it. So you notice it feels just about like warm putty that you use on windows. So he says, now that's the way it should be, proper. He says, now in another 2 hours, if I were to do that, he says, that bread would start to crumble. That would be proper too. He says, he's all into the bread thing. I said, very interesting. So we're eating our sandwich. He says, but I'll tell you this. Sometimes, he said, I get so sick and tired of baking bread that I hope I never see a loaf of bread again in my life. I really do. I said, well, how did you get into this? He said, well, so I was going through basic. They gave us this test, and this AGT test, and they said first they may send me to code school. And so I'm waiting to get shipped to code school. One day I got called down to Cooks and Bakers School. They sent me down there with 200 guys. And one thing led to the next, and the other two guys are regular cooks now. One of them's a first sergeant already. The other guy's a tech. But because I baked the bread there one day, and the sergeant down at the Cooks and Bakers School liked my bread, he said, you're going to break bread. You're good bread man. You're a bread man. From now on, he says, and that's what I am, baking bread. But I'm never going to break another, never. He said, I'm never going to bake another loaf of bread when I get out of this damn army. In fact, I probably won't even eat bread. I can't stand looking at bread anymore. So I got up and I said, well, I got to get back to work. This mess sergeant's going to come in. He's going to really give me the business. So, okay, I'll see you around. Never saw him again. Somewhere out in the darkness right now, there's a guy who spent the flower of his youth baking bread. And yes, and hating it every last minute of it. Now, so about 2 or 3 months later, and I was, I was a real dynamic, involved Boy Scout before I went in the Army. I loved Boy Scouts, and going camping. And about 3 or 4 months later, I remember struggling up an incline, and this was far away from that first place, struggling up an incline in pitch blackness with a 70-pound pack on my back in the middle of a driving, sleeting rain, and just nothing but blackness on all sides. We can't light a light. If you light a light, forget it, you know. No lights at all. We're struggling, and each guy's got his hand on the pack of the guy ahead of him to keep in line so you don't lose guys. We lost about 3 guys that month and never found them again. So I'm grabbing the guy's pack ahead of me, and we're struggling up this incline in the dark, and the rain is coming down. I'm wearing this great big iron helmet, and the rain is hitting on the top of it. And when the rain hits the top of an iron helmet, it's like somebody shooting a machine gun off in a John or something. You just hear this, you can't hear anything, just steady roar on the top of this tin hat. And I can feel this cold rain dripping down between my shoulder blades, down through my poncho. And this pack is soaked, absolutely soaked with water. It was 70 pounds to start with, had about 30 pounds of water in it. And I see struggling up this incline. And all of a sudden, I hear up in the front, I hear the word is being passed back. Fall out! Fall out! We're going to bivouac here! Fall out! Fall out! Everybody, all the way in the back, pass it back! I turn around, there's this lump of a guy in back of me. I say, fall out! We're going to bivouac! And you hear muffled swearing behind you, bivouacking. So we fall out into the darkness, and the guy ahead of me was Goldberg. So Goldberg and I, usually whenever we would fall out, you're given one half of a tent. Each guy has a half, a shelter half. See, you don't have a tent with you, have a shelter half. So in the darkness, I take my entrenching tool, which was a little shovel. He had a little pick, folding pick. Each guy alternately had a different kind of tool. One guy would have a pick, another guy would have a shovel. So I take my little shovel, see, and I fit the handles together, and I start digging in this rocky, cruddy, muddy soil. See, I'm trying to dig a drainage ditch, which you're supposed to dig, see? So I'm digging away there, and I can't get the rocks out. I said, give me your pick, Goldberg. So I'm picking away. And Goldberg, at the same time, is putting together our tent poles. Each of us had one tent pole, which comes folded up. He's got my tent pole. He's putting it up in the dark, and the rain is coming down. And we finally get the shelter half out, each shelter half, and hooked together, and now we've got our pup tent up, and it's raining like hell on it. And I could not make a drainage ditch in the rocks. I did the best I could. So we crawled into the tent, and it's absolutely clammy, wet, ice cold, so cold you can't believe how cold you can get. And I've got everything piled up on me. I've got my gas mask laying on me, everything to keep warm. See, I'm laying in this tent. And it's getting colder by the minute. And now it's beginning to freeze. And when you'd move, you'd hear the moisture on your blanket and stuff. It would crackle, actually crackle. And that tent is getting lower and lower above you because the ice is freezing in this soaked shelter half, and it's getting heavy. And then about, maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, a driving sleet began to come down. And this was a curious mixture of snow and sleet, and it began to roll in under the tent. And I could feel it rolling in under my blanket. We both lay there, and we stayed at that bivouac for 4 straight days, and it rained every day, alternately sleet, alternately snow. We were not dry 1 minute. And I thought to myself at that time, I remember the day when we took that shelter half down, and I packed it up and rolled it up and stuck it in my pack. We began to move out. And I could see the line of guys going up through the green, that green wet forest ahead of me with the slushness, the rain still coming down. I said to myself, if I ever sleep in a tent again, I'm going to have to immediately look up in the yellow book the nearest psychiatrist. Have my head examined. I will never do it again. It was ridiculous. I slept in a tent for 2 years after that. And now I even do it for fun. I suppose that poor guy that baked bread all through his Army career, once in a while, just to show people he can do it, goes in the kitchen, says, watch this, and knocks together a loaf of bread. motivation, friends. If you do it for fun, fun and games, you love it. If you do it under a forced head of steam, that's another ball game. Sometimes you get so cold when you have to be in the wilderness in cold weather that you can't imagine yourself ever getting warm again. You're always cold. Either cold or wet and cold, or cold and wet simultaneously. You just never can get warm or dry. I wonder how many guys can't see skiing for dust because of long extended periods of bitter cold they've spent at times when they didn't want to spend it in that bitter, icy cold with the wind screaming over the top of a pup tent and the snow piling up around the shelter halves and the tent pegs, and you can feel that watery slush and sleet creeping in under your blanket. To catch sleet. That's an interesting thing. We used to catch it in our GI cans, you know, in our mess kits. We'd hold it out like that and we'd catch a bunch of sleet. And then we'd heat it. That's what we drank. Have you ever drunk melted sleet for weeks on end? It does a lot of interesting things to instant coffee. It has a curious taste. This is WOR New York. You stay tuned for John Wingate.